Happy Friday, everyone. This is Vermont Edition, and I'm Connor Cyrus. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the two infrastructure bills over the last few months. All the back and forth finally landed with an agreement last week for one of the massive bills. That's the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. That bill would bring more than $2 billion to Vermont. Vermonters can expect over the next 5 years that that money would go towards highway programs, bridge replacements, electric charging stations, broadband, public transportation, and the list goes on. President Biden is expected to sign the infrastructure bill on Monday. Meanwhile, eyes are on what's going to happen next with the $1.75 trillion social spending and climate bill, also known as the Build Back Better bill. The question, what will the Senate keep in the bill the House passes? Some of its last-minute provisions face an uncertain future. There's already disagreements over the ideas related to deduction of state and local taxes, paid family leave, and immigration. Now, as you can imagine, I don't have all the answers, but our guest today can certainly shed some light and give us his perspective on what we can expect, and that's Congressman Peter Welch. Congressman Welch, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thank you very much.
Now, Congressman Welch, let's start with the infrastructure bill, the $1.2 trillion bill that finally got passed and voted on and is expected to be signed by President Biden. Was it worth the political theater and the back and forth that we saw?
Well, it will be. I mean, the political theater is painful to watch, and I wish we had voted on it in the House right after the Senate passed it. But the bottom line here is that Vermont is going to get over $2 billion. And the nation is going to get $1.2 to $1.4 trillion to do something that we've been talking about for decades. In fact, you know, former President Trump was really saying he wanted to do a big infrastructure bill, but it eluded us. And now we're finally doing it. And what I think is so important is two things. Number one, everything in infrastructure is going to benefit all Vermonters and all Americans, whether they voted for Trump or they voted for Biden. We need safe roads. We need safe bridges. We need electric charging stations so that and make electric vehicles more affordable. And of course, Vermont desperately needs broadband to the most remote house or farm on the dirt road. And we're going to get $100 million for the deployment of broadband. And we've got these community union districts, the legislature and the governor set those up. We've got folks ready to go. And that's really going to be essential to the well-being of Vermont, Vermonters to get their health care online, to be able to work online, for kids to be able to do their homework online. So I think this is long overdue. I really appreciate my 13 Republican colleagues who made the difference in courageously voting for the infrastructure bill, and we got it passed. So I think this is a big day that has been generally had enormous bipartisan support, but just in the weird world of Washington these days, we lost that bipartisan consensus, but we got it done.
Now, you mentioned those 13 Republicans who voted for this bipartisan bill. A lot of them have received a lot of flack from the Republican Party. What do you make of that?
Well, it's an indication of how bad our politics are, because everybody, including the Republican Party in the past, has been for safe roads, safe bridges. I mean, it was President Eisenhower, a Republican, who was the creator of the interstate highway system. So here you have people getting death threats because they voted for broadband. They voted for bridge repair. They voted for safe roads and clean water. Now, those are things that, as I mentioned, really are important to all our communities, regardless of what the politics are of that community or the people in it. And what it reflects is what's infected politics, where with the Washington Republicans, it's kind of a fight for failure. Do we want to vote for this if it can be perceived as, quote, a win for President Biden, as opposed to should we vote for this because it's really good for the people we represent? And that's a real threat for us to be a functional democracy.
Now, Congressman Welch, I'm curious when it comes to the Build Back Better bill or the social infrastructure bill. I mean, first of all, we need to come up with a better name because that is hard to say. But I'm also just curious, if it's passed, what can Vermonters look forward to?
Well, let's just break it down, because Build Back Better is just a name, but it doesn't really describe anything. You know, families are struggling. The cost of raising a family is enormous. Housing, child care, home care, you know, leave if you have to take care of a sick partner or child. And what Build Back Better does is, number one, it says, we're going to invest in our families. So we would have child care in this bill, and it would mean that Vermont families that are now paying on average about 29% of their income, if they have two kids, for child care, they would pay 7%. And that's going to make a big difference in them being able to have some money at the end of the month to pay their other bills. The child tax credit, which is essentially a tax deduction or tax break for families who have children from age 17 to just being born. And that's reduced childhood poverty already by 40%. The pre-K, this is really essential because it's a combination of child care and it's in education of our kids. So families with kids are really going to have some significant relief from expenses and greater security about their children while they try to go to work. And by the way, it's really important to have these things, because then folks have the capacity, particularly women who continue to bear the major responsibility for child care, they'll be able to return to the workforce. Second, a major and overdue commitment to bringing down carbon emissions. And the provisions in this legislation would reduce carbon emissions by about 1.2 billion gigatons. And that's, put it this way, that's a lot. And it's not enough to get us where we ultimately need to be, but it's the first time there's been a major, major investment in policy to bring down carbon emissions. Drug prices. You know, this is something I've been working on ever since I got elected to Congress. Pharma is ripping off people, including folks who need insulin. And there's so many Vermonters who are diabetic. There's a cap on insulin charges, about $35 a month. So all of these things, I think, are really essential to trying to make life more affordable for working families in Vermont. It's going to be a very close vote, a very tough fight, but I do think it's long overdue for government to be trying to stand up on behalf of consumers and everyday Vermonters and everyday Americans.
You know, you mentioned it's a tough it's going to be a tough vote, long fight. One of the things that we're already seeing a lot of debate around is this paid family leave. And I'm curious, why put it in the bill if it's most likely going to fail in the Senate?
Well, it may come out. And first of all, it's long overdue. We should have had paid family leave in this country decades ago. I mean, how does a family work when if their partner gets sick or a child gets sick or they have a parent who needs their help, their choice is to give up their paycheck and go home and take care of their loved one, or stay at work and let their loved one, including their child, suffer. And of course, Vermonters and Americans are going to choose to take care of their child. But then if they lose their income, it's just brutal on them. And you know, in Vermont, many companies have paid leave, but a lot of our companies really are dedicated to their employees. They can't afford it. There's got to be a federal role. So I am totally in favor of us including this. And if in the Senate, because it's a 50-50 Senate, we can't get it, we can't get the 50 votes, we'll have to adjust. But it's a worthy pursuit. In my view, it's long overdue and really, really necessary.
Let's head to the phones and go to Peter in Burlington. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Do you have a question for the congressman?
Yes. First of all, I've been very proud of your flexibility and ability to seek any possibility of cooperation across the political divide. And it's occurred to me that possibly legislation could be devised which would use your flexibility to make contact with people, regions which have marginal land. In other words, strip mine areas where you've got mountaintop removal, land which is open, but it's not being used. That could be a place where devices for collecting energy could be set up in marginal areas with federal subsidies, and like was saying, in Vermont, many of the farms which have used pasturage as a way to make milk are being threatened in their viability. Maybe there's a possibility for having an identity of interest between those two regions.
Peter, I think we got it. So Congressman Welch, I think what he was trying, it was coming in and out, so I don't think I didn't hear him too clearly. But I think the question was about where can Republicans and Democrats find common ground when it comes to wind turbines and solar farms?
Well, first of all, I think it is important for me to reach out to Republicans who are willing to work with me, and I have to demonstrate I'm willing to work with them no matter how difficult it is. And some of those Republicans among those 13, one was Fred Upton, who I've worked with for years on the Energy and Commerce Committee. And I just think Americans know that ultimately it's going to be cooperation and collaboration that gets us through, not just constant conflict. Second, the points you made, I think, are good. The state does location decisions about where renewable energy projects are, and using like old landfills is a place where I think there's an extra incentive to establish renewable energy projects there. But the other point that I think is really interesting that Peter made is that our agricultural sector can be a major contributor to reducing carbon emissions. And we have to include and are attempting to include provisions in the clean energy plans that would reward financially farmers for capturing carbon, because it's got to be an economic benefit to our farmers to allow them to be able to help us address carbon emissions, even as they continue their efforts to be the custodians of our land and providing us with quality nutrition. So that's a pretty good suggestion.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Christina in Rutland. Christina, you're on with Congressman Welch.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really believe that a lot of people want to do the right thing, and some of the people who want to contribute are just stuck in this cycle of not really having the resources to pursue a higher education. And I'm wondering how this bill could support, like, what we could do to make it easier for Vermonters to pursue degrees in the fields required to build a more sustainable infrastructure.
Well, two things. The cost of education is brutal, and the debt burden that students have taken on and the parents have taken on behalf of their kids is really not sustainable. You know, I'm really happy to see in Vermont, like University of Vermont has had a tuition freeze for 4 years, which has been very stressful, but they've managed to do that and acknowledge how expensive it is. In Washington, this bill does not address the real burden of student aid, but there's other legislation that both Bernie and Patrick and I support, which would reduce the interest rate on student loans. We'd like to have a couple of years of free community college education and extend and recognize that college education has to go beyond 12th grade. And in fact, you know, in Vermont, we're taking steps to do that. So we've got a ways to go. But the point you're making, I think, has to be made. We have to be reminded of it. And we basically have to do what we can to get the cost down and the cost of those loans that students are afflicted with down as well.
Let's go to Jonathan in Rockingham. Jonathan, you're on the line with Congressman Welch.
Good afternoon, Congressman. I have a question about the Build Back Better plan and climate change, and an aspect that I really think is remiss in what we've been talking about. I work in home construction, and one of the biggest challenges that we have been fighting in trying to improve housing stock in the United States is the fact that lending institutions won't lend new construction, won't finance new construction loans that have these high efficiency systems in them because they see it as overbuilding and not part of the commonplace market, and therefore it's a form of obsolescence. And I'm wondering if there's any funding in this plan to utilize federal mechanisms, either through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, to improve lending packages so that not just the wealthy that have the upfront money to be able to afford high-efficiency heating systems and added insulation and vapor barrier control, so that we can have this start trickling down into the common marketplace.
Well, of course, you're right about that, because the financing has to be able to provide people the funds they need in order to build tight and efficient homes. And of course, given the work you do, you know very well that there's a significant benefit to not just the environment, but to the homeowner over time if they have efficient systems. And in the legislation, there is money for homeowners. It's tax incentives. It doesn't go directly to the financing entities that you're mentioning, but it does go to the homeowners, where there's going to be tax incentives for doing home energy efficiency measures to make it much more affordable. And also tax incentives for folks who use zero emission appliances, which is really, really essential. And, you know, the technology is there, but people have to be able to afford it. And these tax incentives, we hope, will be very beneficial to people who want to take the steps to do energy efficiency, both in retrofitting their homes, but also getting zero energy appliances. The other question is on building codes, where it really makes sense to build to a standard. And I believe there should be codes. They've got to be reasonable, because we have to have two goals. One is tight houses that are energy efficient, and we have to have affordable housing. So that's a balance. And, you know, you're in the field, so you know well how best to do that. But thank you for that, and thank you for your work.
Now let's go to Stephen in Burlington. Stephen, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for speaking with us today, Mr. Wells. It seems like everybody who has any power, and I'm a student at the community development program at UVM, it seems like anybody who has any kind of power to make these decisions in corporate America or policy regulators in Washington, and also here in the state of Vermont, pretty much all the business leaders, they all seem to be advocating for market solutions for everything. The idea of the neoliberal economy is markets can solve all problems, but markets don't solve problems for poor people, and they don't solve problems like how do you address global warming, because nobody can market solutions to global warming, as it just requires people to give something up without getting anything back. So I'm just wondering if you agree with this analysis, and if there's any possibility that people, the leadership of our country, will come to realize that markets don't solve all problems and that we need to do something different.
Well, see, I think you've identified what is the core struggle about the passage of this infrastructure bill, and particularly the Build Back Better, where the government would be taking a side of the consumer against price gouging by pharma, where the government would be saying, hey, we've spent $8 trillion on wars in the Middle East. Why don't we start investing in childcare? Why don't we start investing in housing, building another a million units? And in fact, the market doesn't address all problems. And in fact, the brutality of the market can occur. You know, FDR, many people say he saved capitalism from its own excesses by establishing the New Deal, where government was taking a position not against capital, not against wealth, not against accumulation, but against the excesses. And we're in a period of enormous excess. I mean, you know, the idea that somebody can have a wealth of $240 billion and not even pay taxes on it. You know, Jeff Bezos didn't pay taxes one year. I mean, what happens? It means that you don't have childcare. It means that you don't have affordable housing. And that income inequality that is a result of government failing to stand up to essentially resist the excesses of unrestrained capital, that has to be addressed. And that's what this battle is about when we're talking about the major investment finally in our families and in our communities and in our broadband for folks who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford it. So you make a really good point, and I agree with you. Thank you.
We are running out of time with Congressman Watts. We're going to take one last caller. We're going to go to Dave in Rockingham. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? I've written a number of letters to Congressman Welch, and he's come through just fine for the veterans. I really appreciate it, and I just wanted to say that. And I was just asking, Congressman, you did mention to me in one of your letters that you were going to try to get dental care through the committee for veterans, especially those in White River, where we all go pretty much. And so I was wondering how that's going, and have you heard anything? And I guess you have, but would appreciate any input you could give me.
Well, thank you. First of all, I want to say that the champion in the Congress and the champion in the country for dental care for veterans and for folks on Medicare has been Bernie Sanders. He's done it, you know, he's just constantly pushing. And I support that. And this is a setback, I'll be candid with you. On this prescription drug price negotiation, had we passed the bill that Senator Leahy, Senator Sanders, and I all support, and I was a major sponsor of, for price negotiation, we would have been able to save $500 to $600 billion. And that's the money that would have been utilized to expand Medicare access to vision, dental, and hearing. Dental is expensive, but it's really important. We had to make a compromise on the price negotiation just because of the 50-50 situation in the Senate, and we've only got a 3-vote margin in the House, and we lost a couple of votes. So we did come out with price negotiation, which is going to be good, inflation rebates that are going to start to save us money, capping the insulin, which is an incredible expense for folks. But we didn't get the savings we need for the expansion of dental, and I think a few senators, Senator Manchin, is against expanding that. So I am not optimistic of our prospects, but I am absolutely committed to continuing to support Senator Sanders and his efforts here.
Hey, one final question, and this is going to be a really quick question because I know you have to go, but there's a rumor that Leahy may not run for a Senate seat. If that's the case, would you run for Senate?
Well, you know, we're very lucky in Vermont that we have Senator Leahy, who's, you know, served us so well for so long. He's the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, and he is in a position and has used that position to the enormous benefit of Vermont. I was with him the last 2 days, and he's doing great. And I am really, really hopeful that he runs for re-election because what he has done and what he can continue to do for Vermont in that position is really important to Vermont. So I'm not even thinking about it, and I am hoping and encouraging Senator Leahy to give us another term.
All right. Congressman Welch, thank you so much. And thank you so much for coming on Vermont Edition today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the calls from Vermonters.
Now, we just heard from Congressman Peter Welch, and he provided us a little bit of an update on the Build Back Better bill, or the social infrastructure bill. We did reach out to Vermont Senators Bernie Sanders and Patrick Leahy, and unfortunately, they weren't able to join us. But we do have my colleague, Bob Kinzel, and he spoke with Bernie Sanders earlier this week, and now he joins the show. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Connor.
So there's a lot to break down, and I don't think we really got to discuss the Build Back Better bill in full detail. But I'm just curious, what do we still need to talk about when it comes to the Build Back Better bill that we weren't able to discuss with Congressman Welch?
Well, I think the final composition of the bill is still very much in question. There are a lot of different moving parts with Senator Manchin of West Virginia now saying that the new inflation rate may be so high that this is not the right time to have a bill of this size, $1.75 trillion. So there are lots of moving parts in terms of the programs, in terms of people's political agendas. But, you know, it strikes me that in many ways, Connor, what we're witnessing are some of the most important weeks in Senator Bernie Sanders' political career, that 40-year career, because the Senate is next week or the week after will be debating some of his top priorities. And as you mentioned, I had a chance to talk to him this week, and Sanders told me that he recognizes that this is a pivotal time for many of the issues that he's been working on for decades.
It is fair to say that I am going to be doing everything that I can to see that a bill is passed which addresses the needs of working families in this country. And I'll tell you, we and the rest of the world are going to have to deal with the climate. This is an existential threat. So this is, if your question is this what I'm going to be spending my time on? The answer is yes, it will be.
So, Connor, this is going to be a very important time for Senator Sanders. And as Congressman Welch mentioned, Medicare, some other top priorities for Senator Sanders. He is the chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, so he's right at the head of this debate and will play a pivotal role in the next two, three, 4 weeks.
You know, what do you make of all, you know, like I mentioned it with Congressman Welch when I spoke with him about, you know, putting paid family leave in there. And he didn't have a good answer when I said, why put it in the House bill if it might not pass the Senate? What do you make of that?
Well, I think that they want to show members of the House who support paid family leave want to show that there is enormous support for that provision in the U.S. House. And it's likely that it will be pulled out in the Senate, as you mentioned. But there's always the possibility of this bill coming up on its own. Senator Leahy talked to me earlier this week about paid family leave and said while he doubted it would make the final version in the Build Back Better bill, he did see an opportunity to bring it up on the Senate floor and the House floor as a standalone piece of legislation. And under those circumstances, its chances of passage might be better because then everybody in the Senate is going to have to go on record, up or down, how do you feel about paid family leave on its own as a separate bill?
Now, we do have somebody on the line that has a question, and I think you might be able to answer that or shed some light. Let's go to Paco and Sharon. Paco, welcome to Vermont Edition. You there? We don't have Paco right now, but Bob, I believe that Paco was curious about the future of broadband in Vermont. Where do we stand with that right now?
Well, we're going to get a lot of money for broadband. As Congressman Welch mentioned in that traditional infrastructure bill that the president is expected to sign on Monday, there's $100 million to expand broadband services in Vermont. Now, this is in addition to the COVID stimulus money that we got. So I think we're going to see in the next 3 or 4 years a huge build out of the more rural parts of Vermont for broadband because people, I think the pandemic has shown, broadband is not a luxury in Vermont. People have been commuting to work, using Zoom. People have been going to school, doing remote learning. We've seen this huge increase in telehealth that's been going on. So I know Congressman Welch a couple months ago compared the broadband of this year to Vermont getting electricity in the 1930s. It's an essential part of the future, especially for economic development in Vermont. And I think we're going to see a big, big push taking place from this federal legislation.
How do you, when you look and compare and contrast Congressman Welch, Senator Bernie Sanders, and Patrick Leahy, all very senior members of their prospective branches. How do you compare them?
Well, I think they're all playing different roles. Certainly over in the Senate, you've got Senator Sanders is now the chairman of the Budget Committee. That's a very important role in the consideration of this Build Back Better bill. Senator Leahy is the chairman of the Appropriations Committee. I don't think the state of Vermont has ever had two senators with so much clout in the U.S. Senate as it does today. And then you've got Congressman Welch over in the House, a member of House leadership, the only House member to serve on both oversight and intelligence. And so he's playing a very important role there as well. So I think, you know, Vermont's congressional delegation, just the three of them, have more influence and more power than perhaps almost any other state delegation. And they're coming at it slightly differently. We saw a difference of opinion with Congressman Welch and Senator Sanders over whether or not that traditional infrastructure bill should be passed by the House, get it done, send it to the president. Congressman Welch said yes. Senator Sanders said no, hold it hostage. We need it as leverage. So you see some disagreements on strategy, but you really don't see any disagreements on actual policy. I think they're very much in line with each other on their top priorities for the country.
I also think it's interesting, and I think one of the callers earlier alluded to it, and you and I have spoken about this, that Congressman Welch has done a really good job at being able to reach over the aisle to, you know, collaborate and work with Republicans, progressives, and moderate Democrats. Is that helping him with this Build Back Better bill or hurting him?
Oh, I think it's got to help him. I mean, that was, Connor, that was always his MO when he served in the Vermont legislature, when he was a senator from Windsor County and also president pro tem of the Senate. His idea was to work with Republicans. He worked with Governor Jim Douglas in many regards on some key legislation. And he sponsors bills with Republicans. And I know you were talking earlier about the 13 Republicans who voted for the traditional infrastructure bill. And they're getting a lot of grief from the House Republican leadership for doing that. Welch has had a number of bills where he has Republican co-sponsors. And he's been telling me that that's harder and harder to get these days because if a Republican member decides to co-sponsor a piece of legislation with Congressman Welch, a Democrat, there's usually some blowback. But he tries very hard to work with Republicans. He listens to Republicans. He may not always agree with Republicans, but he's always certainly willing to listen. And he has really been a part of a bipartisan effort in the House to try to approach issues less from an ideological point of view and more from a practical point of view.
And do we see those same strategies being used with Senator Sanders and Senator Patrick Leahy?
Well, the Senate is a different place from the House, Connor, you know, so the dynamics of trying to work with just 100 people is different than 435. And I think certainly the Republican leadership in the Senate has made it very clear. Mitch McConnell has made it clear. They're not going to support any of this legislation. They don't want to do anything that could possibly help President Joe Biden. So it seems like in the Senate, the political lines are drawn even tighter than they are in the House, and the opportunity for bipartisan work in the Senate seems to be diminishing, and I think that that is a concern to a lot of people.
Now, one of the aspects in this Build Back Better bill is child care reform. What do we know of that right now?
Well, it looks like this is going to be in the bill. So let's, this may be a big assumption, but let's say some version of this bill does pass because the Democrats really need to have some version of it pass. It may not be in its present form, but it will include most of this. The child care subsidies are incredible. Congressman Welch alluded to this. I mean, if you take a family right now, let's say they have a combined income of $80,000 and they have one child in child care. Now, those services could cost anywhere between $15,000 and $20,000 a year. And if you have two kids, you know, double that. So this bill would say you're going to cap your child care expenses at 7% of your income. So if your income is $80,000, that means it's $5,600, which is a lot less than paying $15,000 or $20,000. So this would be huge for families. And I think as Senator Sanders and Congressman Welch have said, they view this Build Back Better bill really as a Help for Family Priorities bill. And this is one of the reasons why, because it would do so much for child care subsidies and also an extension of the child tax credit. That's another big deal for families. That means $300 a month or $3,600 a year for each child under six, about $3,000 a year for children between 6 and 17. That is viewed as a way to really help families out as they're dealing with higher housing expenses, food costs, and whatnot. This is a way to help pull them out of poverty and give them an opportunity. And I think those two provisions are very important, as well as universal pre-K programs that all of a sudden the federal government will be putting billions of dollars into giving 3- and 4-year-olds the opportunity to have these educational programs. So for families, for kids, I think the Democrats view this bill as a very important priority and something that they really want to get accomplished this year.
Now, like we said, you've spoken to Senator Sanders. I'm just curious, what's next for him in terms of getting this Build Back Better bill passed?
Well, I think he's got to take a look at what's achievable and what's not. Congressman Welch mentioned the Medicare drug negotiation provision. Will that be in the final version of the bill? That's up in the air. Senator Sanders feels very strongly about expanding Medicare services, to include dental, hearing, and that's going to be a very expensive thing to do. So I think for Senator Sanders, it's going to be, what can I get? Where's the bottom line? What do I think it has got to be in the bill in order for me to support it? And I asked him this week, when all is said and done, is the Senate going to pass a meaningful bill? And this is how he responded.
What we are operating with is a 50-50 tie in the Senate, which means that every Democrat has got to come on board and the vice president will cast the deciding vote. So it's a very, very slim margin. And within that, you have people with very different points of view. So it's going to be a slugfest, and I think a major debate. And I'm just going to do my best to make sure that this bill reflects the needs of working families in Vermont and throughout the country.
So, Connor, I think that Senator Sanders knows he's not going to get everything he wants in this bill. The question is, can he get enough of the package to enthusiastically support him? And I think that's what he's looking at right now. And we're going to get an estimate from the Congressional Budget Office in the next couple of days or a week or so. And that's going to be playing a huge role as the Democrats take a look at this bill and decide, is it really going to cost $1.75 trillion? If the CBO comes back and says, oh, no, you've really underestimated this, this is going to be $2.4 trillion, then they're going to have to cut some programs. But I think Senator Sanders and Senator Leahy are both optimistic that a bill will pass that will still accomplish a great deal, although perhaps not everything that they wanted.
Certainly a lot to look forward to and a lot still needs to be decided. That's VPR's Bob Kinzel. Bob, as always, it was a pleasure speaking to you.
My pleasure, Connor.